no surprise that newsmakers try to manipulate the audience. They want you to believe that they are the one holding the line, and they'll use any trick they can to get you there. But don't let them fool you. Get unspun. I'm Amanda Sturgill. I've been a reporter, and today I teach future reporters to cut the spin and think critically about what newsmakers say. My podcast, Unspun, shows you how to know when you're being manipulated by the news. Learn to spot the tricks and how to make up your own mind about what's true. So if you're tired of being fooled by the news, subscribe to Unspun today. Unspun, because you deserve the truth.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Save big on your landscaping project at Menards. We're your destination for concrete landscaping blocks. Whether you're installing a patio or adding a new retaining wall, we have the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Plus, get free estimates fast using our landscape design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on landscape blocks when you shop at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, my returning guest is Jen Taylor Skinner. She's the host of the Electorate podcast. We have a lot to talk about, so before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode just for patrons every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal, where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now please enjoy my conversation with Jen Taylor Skinner. Welcome back to the show, Jen.
Thank you for having me, Kimberly. I'm glad to be back.
Well, it's been a while, and the last time you were on the show, I mean, I can talk about this publicly because I did a whole podcast on the other thing that I do about manifesting, but at the beginning, I can finally just be open with it. So at the beginning of the year, or even like toward the end of the last year, my mom was considering moving to Portugal because of, not only because of this election, because she did talk to me about it last summer, but once this election happened, she's like, I want to leave this country. And she's 78 years old. And yeah. Oh my God, I was just like beside myself. I was so upset because I may be almost 57 years old, but she's my mommy. <You know? laughs> Like, I want to take care of her if she ever needs it, because she's always been there for me. And it's not like I was afraid of being abandoned by my mother. It was more of, I want to be there if she needs me in her older age. So long story short, she visited Portugal at the beginning of the month. She was supposed to be there for the whole month, but she decided it really was not for her. So she came home early. And I'm just relieved, because even though I feel bad that she wanted to have this nice trip and she really didn't have a nice trip, at least I know she's going to be here. So, right. I don't know what's going to happen to this fucking country, but at least she'll be here. So I'm feeling quite relieved. There's a number of things that were going on in my personal life aside from the election that were stressful, and most of them have resolved now, including that. So I'm feeling a little relieved. But anyway, how are you doing, and what's going on with you?
Well, first of all, I'm sorry, Kimberly's mommy. I'm sorry you had a terrible time in Portugal. It sounded like a great dream that you'd get to,
Right.
take advantage of now. A lot of people were thinking about that, I think, shortly after the
Yeah.
election, moving out of the country. But, to be perfectly honest, and you and I have talked about this, I love this country. There's no
Me
place like
too.
America with all of its flaws.
Yeah.
I love this country and I'm committed to kind of making, not kind of, I'm committed to making the country better.
Yeah.
But how am I? I am dealing as much as I can given the
Yeah.
climate, right? I mean, we've got lots of sad news. The news cycle is chaotic, but people resisting and the activism and the energy that we're seeing around the country is inspiring. So, and
Yeah,
plus,
it really is.
sorry, I was just going to say, I was thinking about an interview I had earlier this week where, I talked to lots of activists and leaders of organizations, and it's their job to get up every day and to lead people and to be enthusiastic about the future. So that kind of helps keep me afloat.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean I've got my go-tos for feeling good. And Jess Craven, she does Chop Wood, Carry Water. She has a great Substack and she's always listing all of the positive things. And I think, we're going to have our chat today, and at the end of the show, like toward the end of the show, it's going to be more inspiring news because I don't want to end it on a negative note. And we also talked about this prior to recording, but this particular regime, I don't even want to call it administration, I can't be as mentally and intellectually involved as I've been in the past because it's too much, I mean, it's the cruelty, and we're going to discuss some of that, but like there's cruelty happening, unnecessary cruelty. And I mean, I know that they, they've just, we're going to talk about how the House Republicans passed this awful bill, and it would kill people, basically. It would get people
Right.
killed. Although I have to say, this is kind of par for the course with them. We always they always want to cut Medicaid. They always want to do these kinds of things. And no matter who the Republican president would be, as long as the Republicans had control, I would assume they would do this. So I don't necessarily say this is only MAGA, but then again, I don't know, because they want to get reelected. I don't know. So we're gonna t there's so much to talk about here. But okay, before before we get into the politics part, are you still wanting to like shove cake down your throat every day? That's what you talked about that the last time. Like, stop with
I
the
say
cake all
that?
day. Something similar.
Okay, I have not been shoving cake down my face. I have been, what have I been shoving lately? Probably other things, right? But sure. I don't know what I've been doing. What are my vices? My vices these days are television and sometimes booze. And by booze, I just mean wine because I'm a lightweight. So yes, television and wine.
What are
Those
you
are my vices
watching?
these days.
What are you watching?
If you know me, and we've never actually talked about this, right? So
No,
what do
no.
I watch? I talk about this a lot sometimes. I used to talk about it on Twitter, but I'm a big fan of French,
Oh,
procedures
interesting.
and French crime
Interesting.
and so that's probably what I've been watching. I actually
Wow.
think I'm watching a Norwegian series right now, crime series. And just, spoiler alert, everyone dies.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Because
Well,
that's what happens.
I've been watching, there's a show on HBO called, was it Conan O'Brien Must Go? And so he's visiting all these countries and he's just being weird, And the first one we watched, he went to Norway and it was so funny. He was talking to this guy, his name was Gard Seaman. And so
Okay.
Conan just kept saying Gard Seaman over and over and over. It's ridiculous, but if you enjoy his humor, you will enjoy this series because it's funny. It's just ridiculous. So I know my boyfriend and I have been watching that. We just finished for the third time watching Ted Lasso, which I miss. I want to keep watching it. And I don't know. I don't even know what we're watching now. We went through all our shows and now there's nothing new. Did
Yeah.
you ever watch And Just Like That, Sex and the City, and Just Like That?
No, I didn't. I
Did you
did
ever
not
watch
watch
Sex and
that.
the City?
Sometimes. I haven't watched in so long. I had thoughts about it then. I think I usually just ended up being really annoyed at the end of every episode, and so I just couldn't,
Pretty much, yeah. It's
Yeah.
so funny. I mean, I am a junkie. Bob is also a junkie. We are Sex and the City junkies, and it's so funny though, because when we watch it, all we do is criticize Carrie and everybody on the show. But we love it. And
Right,
so the new
right.
one, is coming on May 29th. So we are looking forward to that, even though we almost hate watch that one. Like the original series, it's so weird because when I started watching it back in it was like the 2000s, I think. You know, I was obsessed with it, and I kind of felt like it really mirrored so much of my experience. In fact, there was one time where I was dating. Okay, I'm not going to say dating. I wasn't dating him. I was hanging out with this very young guy when I was 37 years old. I think he was 23, but he was mentally more 18.
And
he was
he
was from Kansas, but he was so sweet and cute. He worked at my video store, and I used to be a smoker. And so, and he was a smoker, and I was trying to quit smoking at this particular time. And I would feel like I knew he had cigarettes, and I didn't want to go buy cigarettes. So I would just go visit him and bum all the cigarettes, and then, and we would kind of flirt. And so, you know, I won't get into the details of all of that, but right around that time, I saw the Sex and the City episode where they were dating young men. And it was really funny because it was like mirroring my life. And it was just, you know, I always felt like it was kind of my, I would call it my girl Bible. But now when I look back on it, I just think, God, Carrie is such an asshole. And I didn't see it then. But now it's like when you watch her and you pick her apart, she really is an asshole.
Yeah.
So, but it was, you know, anyway, that's what we're watching. So. Okay. All right, let's get into politics, because let's start off with this bill.
Oh, yeah.
Cuts to Medicaid, cuts to food stamps. It would be one of the biggest cuts to food stamps, I think, ever.
Yeah.
You know, Medicare, Medicaid, all of that. There's also my, and I didn't read this, and I want to ask you your thoughts on this, but my mother had posted an article about, I think it was this bill, but it would be tax cuts for by 2031. If you're making $15,000 a year, you're going to pay 70-some percent. It's like 71 or 74% tax rate.
That can't be real.
It is real. It is real. And it's it was in the article. But
right.
So I'm just, okay, what do you think the chances are it's going to pass in the House? I mean, I'm sorry, in the Senate.
In the Senate. So let's go through what's passed in the Senate and what hasn't passed in the Senate. So they just passed this big, beautiful bill, right? Which I call the big, big, ugly bill, right? Yeah. So a few weeks ago or a couple of months ago, we were talking about the SAVE Act, the SAVE Act that would disenfranchise millions of voters, particularly women. That has been stalled and it has not been brought to a vote in the Senate.
Thankfully.
There's some other, there are lots of other bills that have passed the House and haven't gotten through the Senate. So I had a list of them here, but so they're, the chances of that going through the Senate are up in the air. As long as we keep calling our, you know, representatives and telling them that we oppose these bills, I think there's a good chance to keep it from passing in the Senate. So I don't know. If you think about the numbers, if we're specifically talking about this bill and the cuts to Medicaid and the cuts to SNAP, I would imagine that once constituents really understand the details of this bill, they'll be up in arms. I mean, you know, Medicaid, I think something like, I don't know, 40% of births in the United States are financed by Medicaid, right? 65% of those are Black mothers. White mothers, I think it's something like 30% of births were covered by Medicaid for white mothers. SNAP benefits, which is something that's typically tied to Black voters, and you probably know this stat, but 37% of SNAP participants or SNAP recipients are white, non-Hispanic, right? So this bill is not going to go over well once people know the details of it. So I am feeling optimistic that it won't pass the Senate.
Okay.
That's how I feel.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to ask a weird question. So it's weird because this is not what I want. It's not what any of us want. But do you think that if we are able to get through these 2 years, I mean, I think we're going to have a recession. Obviously there's pain, but cutting Medicaid, cutting Social Security or getting rid of it, any kind of playing around with those, you know, whether it's earned benefits or any of that, that's going to really, like you said, people are going to be really pissed off. Do you think that it's going to take something like that for Democrats to be able to win? Or do you think that, like, because, I mean, we still have a year and a half until the midterms.
Right.
So there's going to be awful things happening. But I mean, if it's kind of on the same trajectory that it is now, where it's like has to do with immigration. I mean, I'm, you know, I know online is online and it's not the real world, but I'm still seeing supposed, right kind of, I don't know if they're trolls, bots, whatever, but like, right leaning or MAGA kind of trolls still going after the libs. And I know there's always going to be a number of those people, but I mean, do you think it's going to take something catastrophic? Or do you think that if things are kind of par for the course the way they are now, and it's pretty horrible now, do you think, because like, I mean, I saw Rachel Bitticoffer predict that we're probably going to win the midterms like crazy with crazy numbers, but do you think it's going to take something catastrophic that's going to hurt all of us?
I agree with Rachel on that. I think that we will probably do really, really well in the midterms. If you think about the 2018 midterms after the 2016 mm-hmm. election, we just swept it, right? Yeah. We just swept it, the pink wave. So I think the same thing's going to happen. But I don't necessarily agree that people have to suffer.
Okay.
Right? I know that's not what you're saying you want to happen, but no, I don't think that people have to suffer, because if you think about it in that context, Americans have to suffer in order to vote to save democracy. How does that work long term, right? We're not going to survive that if that's the cycle that we're going to go through.
Right.
I mean, I think that if the messaging is on point, you should be able to convince people that, hey, things are great now, right now, but they can be even better. So let's say Democrats win the midterms in 2026, right? And we pass all of these great bills that are kind of, on hold. Let's say the Momnibus Act, which is the act that was introduced by Lauren Underwood, Representative Lauren Underwood, that would reduce maternal deaths, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we're all happy. Let's say we, bring back reproductive rights, right? And we mm-hmm. bring back Roe v. Wade or something akin to Roe v. Wade. We should not have to take us back to the dark ages for people to vote to keep those things. And I think that's a messaging issue. I think that, and you know how I feel about this with voter suppression. I mm-hmm. think that Democrats should focus on not necessarily, how bad things could get. I think that's really important for them to emphasize, but I think they should spend a lot of their energy and time bringing out voters who have been kept at home due to voter suppression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Me too.
That's one way to bring people out and to keep winning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I know we're going to have pain. I don't know exactly where it's going to come from. I mean, people are already feeling pain. I saw, and I didn't repost it. It was at night, so I don't have it in front of me. But I did see that there is a man. He's very Nordic looking. He's very Aryan looking.
Oh, right. And, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, he was like detained. I think he lived in Arizona for like 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's, I don't even understand what's going on here. I mean, I know that the regime hates brown people, black and brown
right.
people. And I was actually surprised to know that they detained somebody from, I don't know, I think he was from Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know what that means, in the bigger picture, because I know they went after they're going after Jim Comey for that
right.
stupid seashell post.
Yeah.
And they want to make examples of people. And I just feel like obviously he's somebody that they feel is against, I don't know about this Norway guy.
Yeah.
What's the deal? I mean, I don't even know why he's detained. Is it just because he's a foreigner? I don't even know.
Yeah, there was one case I read about earlier today where someone who was living, it was also a Nordic person who was living in Mississippi, who was detained because there was a clerical error on his citizenship papers.
Oh, my God.
So that person was in Mississippi. So I don't know if we're talking about the same person. He was also right. Conservative, a Trump supporter who was detained.
Whoa.
By ICE. So here's the thing about that. Here's what I think about that. Americans are already in pain,
mm-hmm.
right? We have, gun violence and deaths by gun are the highest, cause of homicide for children or deaths for children, right? Our healthcare system, it needs lots of updates. Americans mm-hmm. are already in pain. And if you think about the years under the Trump administration, the first one during COVID, there was pain there,
mm-hmm.
right? So implying that they need to feel more pain to not
right.
vote for the
yeah.
person, just really don't think that that's where the votes are. I really think, again, this is why I always emphasize focusing on that constituency, that demographic of voters who have been kept from voting.
Yes.
Due to voter suppression, due to other issues, being disenfranchised or, you know, targets of disinformation, focusing on those voters versus the people who are fair weather voters. They don't really care that their lives could be better. They will vote for Trump and that this administration regardless, right? Because yes. Like I said, there's already pain in America. We don't need more to convince these people. And honestly, if you did convince them to vote for Democrats in the midterms, come 2028, they'll be right back on the Republican side. That's what
you're right. You're right. 100%. Well, I mean, and I think with, you know, I had Jamie Harrison on my show. I don't know when it was, but I was really scared. You know, this was several years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think it was before Joe Biden was elected. And one of the things that Jamie said, and I agree with him, he said, you know, Democrats like hope. You know, they love the hope message. But I feel like while you're correct, I think there's all the voter suppression and we need to kind of get those people who have been kept from the polls, get them to the polls. But then in this, you know, when whether it's 2026 or 2028, you're right. going to have all these people, especially independent conservative leaning people who might come over to our side. And I feel like Democrats with the messaging, you know, like Rachel Bitticoffer believes in using the right's way of messaging, which is using fear. And I agree with her on this because I feel mm-hmm. like if Democrats say, you know, here's what the Republicans are doing to scare them, but then they give them hope by saying, if you elect us, this is what we'll do. So you kind of cross off both things there. You check off both boxes where, you know, people are motivated more by fear because when people are comfortable, they stay home. They just don't show up to the polls. And, you know, if they're not comfortable, there's more of a chance that they're going to show up. And we still have half the country that doesn't vote. And, you know, I don't know what it's going to take for them. Maybe, you know, maybe a recession. I don't know. I mean, we look at Barack Obama and I don't remember what his, I think it was 346. Was it 346 that he won?
Yeah.
The first time.
Big margin. Yeah.
Yeah. It was huge. And it was after those horrible fucking Bush years. And so it's like, we're going to have something like that. You know, I know we're going to go into some kind of, you know, recession, depression, whatever it's going to be.
But he ran on hope though.
He did run on hope. He did. You're right. You're right.
I mean, he had a big poster. That was a famous poster about hope.
That's true. But keep in mind, I mean, I think though that again, that was after that, you know, terrible. It was like right September 2008. There was that huge crash and that did not help Bush or not mm-hmm. Bush, but like it didn't help. What's his name? The guy who was running, his name is escaping me right now. But you know, with Palin, that was also another
McCain.
Yeah, right. It didn't help him that George Bush completely ruined the economy. But yes, hope was the big picture. It was his whole thing. But
and Kamala Harris too, right? I mean, she had massive crowds based on her.
Yes.
People were drawn to her because of her optimism, right?
Yes.
So yeah, I don't necessarily agree with that. So we've talked about this before, so forgive me for repeating myself. But what happened after, you know, the Obama's margins were massive, right?
Yes.
He had the largest voter turnout for Black voters, I think, in history, right? So we saw the turnout margin shrink to its lowest point in history in 2008, right? And do you know what happened after 2008? I think it was 2010, Republicans started their extreme gerrymandering project, right? Which was the first thing that started to disenfranchise voters. Shortly after that, in 2013, Shelby County versus Holder went to the Supreme Court, which gutted the Voting Rights Act. Mm-hmm. That's when we start to see turnout shrink. Right. I don't think it had anything to do with messaging around hope and messaging around fear. The research and the data bears this out. It had to do with the fact that people were through these two major acts. There's a third one in there. There's a third pillar that's keeping people from voting. But those things, you can look at the charts and see that turnout began to decline just rapidly after those two things happened. Right. So again, Obama ran on hope and people.
You're right. You're right. I concede. So what does that mean for 2026 when, you know, these oppressive laws are still in place.
Right. Well, we have to keep the SAVE Act back.
Yes,
right?
We do. And I mean, I think, don't you think if so many people, I mean, I think I do believe, just like in 2018, how we had a huge, huge midterm. We had all these people turning out to the midterms. And I will say, though, because they hated Donald Trump, you know, that was that was a big reason. So it was hope that we can overcome Donald Trump. You know what I mean? So it's like, I do think that there's going to be motivation from people to vote either for Democrats or not to vote, who would normally vote for MAGA. But the idea of it's got to be too big to rig. Like, there's just got to be too many people showing up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think, and I do think we're going to see that in the midterms.
And I would argue that that's what happened in 2020 that pushed Biden over the finish line. And the reason it was too big to rig, the reason it was too big is because people were at home. They were in lockdown.
You're right. Yes. 100%.
And lots of states had, you know, they were accepting mail-in ballots. So people who would normally be kept from the ballot box were able to vote because they didn't have to go out and they didn't have to stand in line for hours and hours. And that's what we need to focus on for, you know, not only just 2026, but 2028 and the elections, you know, beyond that. Voting needs to be easier in this country. Right. And it needs to be democratic. But that's the thing. If you see voting, if voting were easy in this country, Republicans, I don't think they would win ever again, or at least for a very, very, very long time.
Yeah.
Right. There's one other thing I was going to say about Obama and his message of hope. Okay. Oh, so we have, you know, Obama was obviously the first Black president. If we ever want to see a person of color, a Black president, or a woman in office again or ever, they can't run on fear and anger. They can't. Can you imagine if Obama was running on fear? And you cannot.
Yeah, well, but you know what? I will say this. I mean, I think, though, Kamala Harris did a really good job of, like, doing what I said, where she was like, if Republicans get in, this is what they're going to do.
Right.
And I think that's letting everybody know. It's just like with the lies that the Republicans say, oh, the liberals are going to take your guns. Okay, that's a lie. But they do that. And if we're in, you know, you can keep your guns. So that's all I want to see. Like, I just want Democratic people, any kind of candidate or messaging, making sure to tell everyone voting for Republicans gets you this, and that should scare you.
Right.
And then, you know, but Democrats have the solution, and or Democrats have the antidote, or whatever it is, because that's not necessarily running on fear. It's just the idea of if you vote for the other side, you're going to hurt yourself. And I think a lot of MAGA, not all, and there's just going to be a bunch of them that will never get it. But a lot of them now are kind of waking up to the fact, like, oh, wait a minute, I didn't vote for this. It's like, yeah, you did, but you chose to ignore. And so, you know, and how, I mean, I think we're so deep into Trumpism that there's going to be a percentage of the electorate that's going to, they're just always going to be Trumpers. They'll never be able to admit. I mean, I have a family member who I think is pretty much that way. I think the only way it could ever be admitted is if my family, if that relative lost something.
Yeah.
And, you know, if someone else loses something, they don't care. But if it's them losing it, then all of a sudden. And I don't even know if they could admit that they were. I mean, it's like, could they admit that he's a con man? I don't know.
Right.
Because they're like identity.
Right. We don't have time to deprogram some of these people. I mean,
right.
We should try. Right. Like, if you think about the people, like people who've lost children because they weren't vaccinated.
Yeah.
And then they come back, and I can't remember the name of the family that this happened to. The child died of measles. They're conservative, and they said that they don't regret not giving
the
vaccine. That's the thinking. That's what we're working with here. So, you know, I don't have a lot of faith in people who say that they voted for Trump three times and they do it again. Or how many times? I guess, three times and they do it again. You know, given what he brought on this country, I don't have a lot of faith that they would not be fair weather voters. So
oh my god, this is all so stressful. All right, let's switch over and let's talk about Bernie Sanders. And I know we talked about this before the show. You're a little bit more up on things than I am. I know a little bit about it, and so I want you to just kind of take this one.
Oh, well, it's everyone's talking about the interview that he did on, is it Andrew Schultz? That's his name, the
I'm not sure.
podcaster.
Yeah.
So he went on the show and they were talking about identity politics, essentially, right? And he, kind of put identity politics in quotes, in air quotes. And, it's hard to, I wish I had the quote right in front of me, but he basically said that we can't really focus on identity politics. And he made a sarcastic comment about Black people and people of color and gay people being great and wonderful, but what do you stand for? Right. And so that was kind of the sarcastic, comment. And it got lots of guffaws from the bros in the room. And it was really offensive to a lot of people, including myself. Right. And you know where Bernie Sanders stands on identity politics. And so that's what all of the discussion or the discourse this week is around.
Yeah, and I mean I have been all over the map with him. I've liked him, I've hated him, I've literally been all over the map. And initially, when he and AOC were out there, getting big crowds and really just getting people fired up to save democracy, I was grateful for that. I'm still grateful for that, but I don't
Right.
like what he's talking about. That's the thing. That's why, these kinds of comments are the reason why I turned against him, because I was just like, oh my God. I mean, there's a number of reasons, and I mean, I don't want to. I absolutely do not want to rehash 2016. Oh my God, how many times have we done that? So, I understand his part and his role in 2016, and he hurt Hillary Clinton and he hurt the Democratic Party. And I know he did. And but it's like right now I feel like it's so difficult because what I'm seeing happening, and this is so early, and I know talking about 2028 is almost ridiculous at this point, but the thing that I already see happening is that divide where, the Democratic voters, we've got a bunch of them who, love Bernie, they love AOC, they love the more progressive wing of the party. And I'm not going to refer, like, when I say far leftist, I'm going to think in terms of it's that horseshoe theory where they're almost
Right.
the same. So I don't consider Bernie or AOC in that far left. Maybe they walk the line occasionally, not so much AOC for me, but Bernie will walk that line. But I know I'm not even going to mention names, but there are people out there that have hundreds of thousands of followers and they're promoting the fact that the, Democrats are the party of genocide and, they do all this stuff. So it's like, I'm not talking about them when I
Right.
talk about progressives. I'm
Right.
talking, I mean, I consider myself a pragmatic progressive. So, but I'm seeing right now that there is a little bit of a divide starting, and that's what's worrying me. I mean, I have no idea. We don't even know who the candidate is, who's going to emerge in 2028. But, let's just say it was Pete Buttigieg. Okay.
Yeah.
When he just recently had a vote vets town hall kind of a thing. And I mean, it was very well received and a lot of people like him, but the comments, he supports genocide. So this
Really?
genocide thing is never going to go away.
They said that about Buttigieg.
Yes, because he supported Biden and Biden, according to them, Biden supported genocide. So therefore, so does he. Any Democrat that supported Joe Biden is going to be tagged. They do it to Kamala. They do it to all of them. Anybody who supported Joe Biden.
Didn't Bernie
So,
Sanders support Joe Biden?
yes, he did. But of course, I'm not going to
Okay.
necessarily say that about that him, because he's got, his particular audience.
Right.
So, and they, they love him for whatever reason. But it's like I don't know. I mean, I'm a little worried about that. But I know it's early, so it's like we don't know exactly where it's going to go. But it looks like it's going in that direction, and it's freaking me out because I feel like, oh my God, oh my God. And I know that Russia is going to play into it like they did in 2016. So there's going to be all these bots and bullshit trolls who are making the argument that the Democrats are the worst. And it's going to, I don't know how much it's going to influence real voters. I have no idea. It's upsetting to see that happening. But I mean, do you think Bernie is ultimately, do you think at this stage he's hurting more than helping, or do you see a, or how do you feel about that? I mean, obviously he was offensive to you and it was an offensive thing to say.
It's a very gray area for me as to whether he's helping or hurting, but I do appreciate the tour that he's on with AOC. I think that reaching people and taking progressive policies and the policies that Democrats are pushing to the people out in red states is a good thing, generally, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. We have a rise in hate crimes in this country, mm-hmm. right? And we see it. It's playing out violently. We have a president who's in the White House who's falsely claiming that there's a white genocide in South Africa, right?
Yeah. It's just crazy.
We cannot afford to have politicians with massive platforms go onto broadcasts, you know, these bro mm-hmm. podcasts, right? Having conversation with people who are known bigots, right? Mm-hmm. And having a chuckle over marginalized people in this country.
Yeah.
We just can't. He can't afford to do that. Yes, he's a senator from Vermont, but he has a massive national platform and mm-hmm. people listen to him. Mm-hmm. When he starts to be dismissive about marginalized groups and, you know, having a chuckle at the expense of gay people or black people, that makes people think that that those groups are not worthy mm-hmm. of thinking about in the context of legislation, right? Yeah. Legislation doesn't just happen along class lines. We know that, right? Mm-hmm. The reason the Voting Rights Act was passed in 1965 is because Black people specifically were being kept from voting, right? And you can go through the entire history of this country and look at legislation that was necessary to make it equitable along gender and along racial lines. So I'm not really sure how he comes to this place and dismisses identity politics to tell.
Yeah, that's infuriating.
To tell this country, right? So the people in marginalized communities, Black and brown people, are going to be the majority in this country very, very soon, mm-hmm. right? And their identity, their specific identity as people of color, shapes how they experience this country. It mm-hmm. shapes their healthcare. It shapes their maternal, their maternal outcomes. It shapes everything. Mm-hmm. It shapes what jobs they're going to get. To tell them that we're not going to consider that as leaders in this country, that doesn't make sense to me. It's not smart politics, right?
Yeah.
And there's a clip that's kind of going around with Kamala Harris. I don't remember what year it's from, but she said something really smart about that. She goes, "Don't let people use identity politics to make you kind of ashamed of your identity." People who use it in this dismissive way, what they want you to do is to shut up about mm-hmm. your identity. They don't mm-hmm. want you to talk about it. They want to shame you for emphasizing your identity. Mm-hmm. Right. And she is interesting that you used Russia, because at the end of her quote, she said something about Russia. Hmm. When Russia was interfered in the 2016 election with their disinformation campaigns and their propaganda campaigns, one of the issues that they used repeatedly was race and mm-hmm. identity. They mm-hmm. did it. That's how they interfered with the 2016 election. That's how they interfered in all elections following that. So it's not something it's. Yeah, I won't want to say it's irresponsible, mm-hmm. but I'll just leave it at that. We should not have major leaders in this country, people with millions and millions of followers, people who are going around the country dismissing identity politics. You should lift people up in your constituency.
Right? Yes, yes, 100%. And then that takes us to the other one, which is Gavin Newsom, who I'm assuming, I don't know how you feel about this, but from what I understand, he's pretty much killed himself politically. Like, I just he's platforming Nazis. I heard that Kimberly Guilfoyle is helping him get some of these people, like Steve Bannon, as guests. Now, I don't have the proof of that. I can't remember where I heard that. It might have been my boyfriend, but I don't even remember. So anyway, but regardless, he dismissed, I never can say the man who was sent to El Salvador by quote unquote mistake. Right. And I can never remember his name.
Garcia.
I guess, Newsom said that there was a distraction. While you have Van Hollen going to El Salvador, talking to the guy. And, with Newsom calling it a distraction and then platforming Nazis and stuff, I feel like he is kind of shooting himself in the foot. What do you think of what he's doing? Because it seems to me he's trying to appeal to that bro crowd. He's trying to appeal, I don't know, to some kind of center-right thing? I don't know. I mean, is that what you're getting from him?
People's lives are not a distraction.
No.
I find that offensive. I don't understand where he's coming from with that. I honestly don't understand what he's doing. Initially, when I saw him platforming these right-wing, these white nationalists, these Nazis, I thought that he was trying to do what a lot of people do, particularly white men, when they want to run for office, when they want to run for higher office, they think that their win is situated among people who are like them, right? And you know what I mean by that. He was, you know, this was an early run for him. And I thought he was more politically astute than
Me
that, right?
too. So did I.
So, because first of all, it's very early to be ruining your career if you want. If you want to run for office in 2028, you know, save that for later. So just think about it in the context of like political planning. It's just not very smart. But then also, you lead one of the most progressive states in the country, the state of California. Think about all of the people in your constituency that you are offending by platforming these people and having a chuckle with them, right? I just don't understand his thinking. I don't know who's advising him. Up until this point in his career, he hadn't really made a misstep like that. So I'm really, really confused by this. And my only guess, my only theory is that he sees, this is just, I can't get into his brain, I can't get into his heart, but I think that he sees a small window for himself to run for president, right? And that window would be closing after 2028. I don't see him being able to run in 2032. Maybe he could, but you know, I think he thinks that my time is now. Now that Kamala Harris, maybe he thinks Kamala Harris is out of the picture. I don't believe that she is. And maybe he thought, you know, I have to go for it. And there was some desperation in these moves with him. That's my theory.
Yeah, it seems a little desperate. I mean, I remember reading an article about him several years back that painted him as a full-blown opportunist. And when I read it, I thought, you know, because I had always been his fan. I used to like watching Bill Maher. I haven't watched in years. But when I did watch and he was on, I was always so impressed by him because he was just like filled with information. He knew, you know, whatever the subject, he had something to say about it, and it was educated. So it was informed, and he was always so articulate. And you know, I mean, he seemed like a really impressive guy, and then all of a sudden this happens, and like, well, like I said, I read that article and I thought, you know, it kind of made sense, and I don't remember exactly what it said, but it just outlined why they saw him as an opportunist, a political opportunist, and I thought, you know, that's kind of make it's ringing pretty true, and it surprised me, and then all this stuff started happening, and it was like, oh. Well, look at that. So yeah, he is I think he's hurting himself, and I don't know where he goes from here. And I mean, I don't know if I don't know. I guess that's just we're just gonna find out with somebody who's kind of walking both sides, because that's what he's doing. I mean, I know he condemns what's happening now, but to write off, like you said, a human being as a distraction, a human being who is basically being tortured. You know, he's taken away from his family, and it was all by mistake. And then you've got is it Pam Bondi saying he's never going to come back to the United States? I mean, I don't even know the names of all these people, so I could be getting it wrong. But it's just so gross. It's so disgusting, and I don't know how anybody could call that a distraction.
I mean, a distraction from what, right? It just doesn't make sense logically. It's just not a logical argument. You can both say that these people are being treated inhumanely by being taken to El Salvador, all of them, not even the ones who were taken mistakenly, all of them, right? And then you could also say, and also the Trump regime or the Trump administration is doing really, really terrible things. And those two things, people can hold those two ideas in their heads at the same time. They're just two ideas. It's not like they're five ideas, but they're just two.
Oh my God, it's like I just want to go back to last year.
No, it doesn't have to be a distraction. It does not have to be a distraction for it to be
No,
for
I think he was
I
talking
don't
about,
understand it.
I think the distraction was from whatever economic policy. I don't even know. I don't even know it was a
Again,
distraction.
you can say both those things. You can say, hey, this thing that's happening over here with people being taken, you know, disappeared in America is really bad. And this thing is also really bad. So actually, it would make a really strong political argument to say, like, look at all these terrible things that this administration is doing at once, right?
I mean, we're seeing that from some of them. I mean, you've got AOC saying it. You've got Jasmine Crockett. You know, I mean, she's extremely outspoken. You've got J.B. Pritzker and a number of Democrats who are kind of rising to the occasion and really talking about these issues the way we are. But I and Swalwell and you know, there's a number of them. But
Yeah, and
it's
Yeah, go on. Sorry.
No. Go ahead. You go ahead.
You mentioned AOC again, and I wanted to mention this earlier because I think it's really important to make the distinction between two progressives who were traveling the country together, AOC and Bernie Sanders, mm-hmm. because they're both inarguably progressive, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. AOC has never said the things that Bernie has said
right.
about
She's
identity
smarter.
Politics.
She's smarter about that.
And that's when that's what we're talking about when we talk about political instincts. Mm-hmm. You don't have to deride certain groups of people, marginalized groups, to get across your progressive stances, right? And I think that when people do that, not just Bernie Sanders, just anyone who does that, I think it's because they believe that they cannot win mm-hmm. on their own ideas alone. So maybe they can win over getting lots of people to like them, and you know, mm-hmm. maybe they can get some votes, but you can't win primaries, you can't win over your colleagues in Congress, and you can't win over the majority of constituents across the country. Maybe you can win in your own state or in a few states, but you can't win over the majority of people if you deride them. And you shouldn't need to do that. If your message is strong enough, if you present yourself as a strong enough leader, mm-hmm. you do not have to have a chuckle about gay people or Black people. You just don't need that.
That's so true. It's so true. And yeah, I mean, she understands. I think she understands messaging better. And I mean, she is younger. And so she's got her finger on that kind of pulse and all of that. But obviously she wants to grow. You know, I mean, yeah. I think, you know, she came to the scene with a lot of hate from many Democrats. Many Democratic voters, but I think she won a bunch of them over. I know she hasn't won all of them over. Some people still hate her, but I don't hate her. And I you know, initially I gave her, I think, a couple of years. I just wanted to see before I made my mind up about her. What does she bring to the table? And you know, I mean, I like the fact that she, because she's young, she knows how to speak the language of young people. And I think that's really important. I mean, we've got this whole thing right now in the Democratic Party where everybody's like, oh, there's all these old people and we need younger people. And I agree. Like, I think we need a good mix, though, of young and old, because older people bring experience and understanding. And, you know, they've been around the block a few times, and then the new people right. bring fresh ideas. So I think it's good to have a good mix of them. And that brings me to David Hogg. you know, I know there's a lot of controversy with David. He, you know, I can't remember what his official title is at the DNC, vice chair. Okay. So he wants to primary Democrats in safe districts. And I know that this has pissed off the DNC. It's pissed off a lot of Democratic voters. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you feel about this is how I feel about it. And I, you know, I'm not going to get into my whole Brad Schneider thing. I've talked about Brad Schneider a bunch of times, but the real quick on him is he's in Illinois and, you know, he will vote with the Democrats, but he's a really lazy, lazy, lazy Democrat. He's not going to do anything over and above. He'll just, you know, vote with the Democrats. So if, you know, David Hogg is getting a lot of crap because he wants to bring in, I know he wants to bring in progressive people, but again, it's just a primary. It's not like they're going to automatically replace. The voters have to decide. You know, do they like the old guy? Do they want the new guy or girl? And so I think that maybe my understanding is a little bit, maybe I don't have all the information, but I think that's the gist of it, where I think I think the DNC doesn't like what he wants to do. And I think there are voters that are upset that he wants to primary, but it's safe blue districts. He's not going in red districts, you know, where it's a real danger. He just wants to replace some of these do nothing Democrats. And, you know, I mean, I am a full blown Democrat. I am loyal to the Democratic Party and I always will be. But I feel like that we need to, just like any sports game, when you play a game, you know, the coaches want to go back and watch and they say, what did we do right? What did we do wrong? And let's, you know, improve. Let's keep improving. And that's where I stand. It's like, you know, we can always do better. Just because you have a critique of the Democratic Party doesn't mean you're anti-Democratic Party. So right. I don't know. Where do you stand on this?
Well, let me ask you. I mean, the entire congressional body on the Republican side is made up of do-nothing Republicans.
Yeah.
You've got a big old field of people to primary on that side, right?
Definitely.
I mean, so that's where I say, you know, so I get wanting to primary people who are quote unquote do nothing Democrats, but does who, you know, where does it end? Is Maxine Waters a do nothing Democrat?
Right.
You know, she's older. What about Al Green? Right.
Well, older. It's not necessarily older. It's just the Democrats that are not, you know, I mean, because like, for instance, with Brad Schneider, he did not want to sign a resolution to the ERA, which was removing the deadline. The right. only reason he did it was because he, eventually he did it was because he got invited to a fundraiser and it benefited him. And so, you know, instead of signing a resolution, which wasn't even a vote, he couldn't even be bothered
right.
to protect women. So it's like, that's, I mean, yes, he votes with Democrats, and I absolutely believe we should be primarying, you know, any, you know, we should be going against any Republican and making sure that if there is no Democrat running, we get a Democrat in there. But I can also see where, you know, we've got some of these people, and no, I would not consider Maxine Waters a do-nothing Democrat. And right. it's not even about older Democrats. It's just about those Democrats that could be doing a little bit more for their constituents. And it's like, you know, because I did all the stuff with the ERA and because I bullied some of the senators and House reps into signing on, it's like, why did I have to bully them?
Right.
They should have just, they're Democrats. They should, we're, it's supposed to be the party about protecting women and, right. and making sure that we all have equity and equal rights. And they just couldn't fucking be bothered. And that pisses me off. So I don't have a problem with primarying somebody like Brad Schneider with another Democrat who's still also going to caucus and vote with the Democrats, but maybe do a little bit, you know, not have to be bullied or blackmailed or not blackmailed, but like, you know, oh, well, I've got a ticket for you for a fundraiser, you know, something that only benefits him. He didn't give a shit about me. He didn't give a shit about you. He just right. wanted to get into that fundraiser. So that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about older Democrats.
Right. But I are we sure that he isn't just talking
yeah,
about
older? Yeah, that's true. And I don't know. But from what I understand, you know, why, which is that he just basically wants to get rid of the ones who are not going over and above. And if that's the case, you know, I don't have a problem with that. I really don't.
Right, right. Because that messaging has been conflated, right? People right. are conflating age with do nothing Democrats. So I just want to make sure. And I think, I don't know if he's been clear about which Democrats he wants to primary, which right. ones he wants to go after. Has he been clear?
I don't know of any list of any particulars.
Right. I mean, obviously, and I think that's always happened, right, within the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. If there is, you know, blood in the water, as they say. If people are, you know, seeing that a Democrat isn't doing something, they will get a primary challenge. We saw it in 2020. We saw it in, you know, it always happens. We saw it in 2018, right? That midterm.
Yeah.
That always happens. So I'm not really sure what he's doing here that's different. But I think what has rubbed some people the wrong way, and we can talk about this part of it, is the kind of open blaming of the party in, you know, what did he say? Just trying to think back to what he was saying about the DNC, that they were going after him, right? Mm-hmm. The whole thing about the vote, you know, mm-hmm. what I'm talking about, the vote about having to re-vote for their vice chairs. I think that's what really bothered people. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Right. Yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah. So I think that was more bothersome than his plan to primary people who should be primaried.
Well, and I do agree that it is so important right now for everybody in the Democratic Party to be united. I mean, it's just so super important. And I know that that's asking a lot because it's a big country and so many things are going on. But I mean, if we're not united, I don't know how we're going to survive this. So we have to find a way, you know, to all get along and to make this work. And frankly, the way that I look at it is however it all shakes out, you know, whoever the nominees are, whether it's 2028, 2026, I don't give a shit. I'm voting for the, you know, it's just going to be, I'm absolutely blue all the way because I just feel like, you know, the fascism will take hold. We've got a fascist government right now, but I don't consider, even though America is being run by fascists, I don't consider us a fascist country yet because right. it's got to cement before I would say, all right, America is fascist. It's just being run by criminals and a fascist regime. So we still have some hope that, you know, we can overcome this. And that's going to lead me, we have to take a really quick break, but we'll be back after this message. Hey, this is your host, Kimberly. If you like what you're hearing, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/startmeup. Take a look at all the tiers, choose one, and be my patron today. Thank you in advance. Okay, we're back. So I want to end with some hopeful messaging. And I was talking about, you know, David Hogg and all that. So I want to move that over and say, I saw, and I want to ask you about this. I saw Rachel Maddow. There were two things that she said. Number one, she said that, I'm trying to remember the wording, was that there is a resistance against Trump. And as long as the resistance remains nonviolent, the resistance will win. And then she was on Colbert and she was saying that, so I saw that one first. And then on Colbert, she said that all the people who like we thought were like the doomsayers, you know, like the worst, the people, I think like Sarah Kendzior might be one of them. She didn't mention her by name, but like the people who are predicting the most doom were correct. Yeah. And she said, but the people, like nobody predicted what's happening with the protests, because there are protests every day and the American people are standing up.
Yes.
I mean, we're seeing, you know, Tesla and Target has really taken a hit. So, but you know, we're seeing protests every day and nobody expected that. So you and I briefly talked about the midterms and I think we're going to have, you know, Rachel Bitticoffer, who was all doom at the beginning of this. I mean, she's like, that's it. The country's over. No free and fair elections. A couple of weeks ago, she said back in 2018, I predicted that the Democrats were going to take 40 House seats. And she goes, I'm predicting the same thing. It even could be more. So all of a sudden she went from we're toast as a country to where we're going to take the midterms back. So I think that's promising. And I'm just wondering, you know, what are your thoughts on this? Because, you know, we're both just American citizens who want to see the country go back to some form of democracy. And do you think we're going to make it?
You know, I do think that we're going to make it. I mean, I think a lot of us shortly following the election, we were all kind of doom and gloom. I mean, you and I talked about this offline, right? And I'm wondering about myself back then, because how could we not foresee the American people standing up to fight for our democracy? We've done it again and again. Mm-hmm, you know, we did it in the 60s. We did it in the 70s. We did it, you know, so I think that some of us, this is who we are as Americans, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And Rachel Maddow is right. There are protests every day. I think there was like a 3-mile protest somewhere. And I can't remember which state, happening just a couple of days ago. So even though the mainstream media isn't really covering it, people are coming out. These are probably some of the largest protests we've had in this country since the 70s, right? Or yeah, since the Black Lives Matter, you know, protests in 2020, right? Mm-hmm. Again, another example of people rising up when we see things that we don't like in this country, right? So I agree. I think that the midterms will be fine. If you had asked me, you know, 6 months ago or 5 months ago, rather, I probably would have said, oh, what's happening to this country? I probably would have been... I've never really been a naysayer, but I've been on the side of like, you know, what are we doing? Maybe, you know, can we get out of this? But I agree. And I actually had a conversation with Sarah Kate Ellis, the president of GLAAD, I think it was yesterday, actually, or 2 days ago. And, you know, she said something very similar, but she said something similar, but also a little bit different, in that one thing that we can do right now is that we can use our voices, you know, as content creators, as podcasters, as independent media, to help push the right messaging. Like, mm-hmm, that's the role that we have right now, to help move people in the right direction, right? And to bring them the facts around all of the disinformation. I think that's a part of the resistance as well. Mm-hmm. And we saw the rise in independent media coming out of this election. That's something that we didn't see happen at this trajectory before. You look at Midas Touch and all these other, right, you know, independent media platforms that are rising, because people, the American people, are hungry for that. They're hungry for the truth. They're hungry for, you know, something to counter the disinformation. So I, you know, I am optimistic.
Yeah, and I am too, because I feel like also, you know, Americans have been raised on this constant diet of freedom and liberty. And I mean, obviously it's not a perfect country, and it's not the kind of freedom that you just get to do anything you want whenever you want. But I lived in Soviet Russia. I will just keep saying this because I had the opportunity to see what it was like to live in a police state. And obviously, you know, I was only 12 years old. And that is when I truly understood that not only the meaning of the word patriot, but that I was one. And so while I never expected the United States to go the way of Soviet Russia, you know, it's the fear of that it would turn into a modern day Russia or like Hungary or whatever, Turkey, that was possible. But I like you, I think, you know, at the 6 months ago, it was it was so grim. It just felt so grim. And, you know, I mean, for me, I had the personal story of, like I said, you know, I was a little worried my mom was going to leave. Then I had other things going on in my life, people I cared about having health issues, and all of, you know, it was like just real, everything hit all at once. And it was overwhelming. But now that, like, it's like the sun is out, literally it's spring. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, back when that happened, we were just heading into winter and it was going into, you know, I mean, we live here, I live on the East Coast. So it, you know, it gets dark early. It gets dark at like 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And it's just got this kind of oppressive feel to it. But then the sun is coming out and, you know, people are showing up and we're seeing people fighting back. And we're seeing some Trump supporters going, wait a minute. I did not realize that, you know, I mean, we all know why they didn't know what was going on, because they weren't really paying attention, but or maybe their priorities were a little messed up. But regardless, they're realizing that it's affecting them now. So while he'll always have a certain, you know, base there, he's losing some of it, and he can't afford to lose any of it. And I want to end with this. And I, you know, I'm a little nervous about talking about it, so I want to be very, very careful. But when I had Christopher Boozy on the show, I think he was my first guest after the election, Boozy did not think that Trump was going to make it to the inauguration. I did. I had a feeling Trump was going to make it. But I felt that no matter who it was, whether it was Joe Biden, and obviously Kamala was in the mix, but if I didn't think this about her, but with, when it was Joe Biden versus Trump, I didn't think either one of them was going to last the 4 years if they won. Right. In 2024. Right. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? I don't know. And as far as Trump is concerned, you know, he doesn't look very healthy. So there's that. There's also, I don't know that we're going to get the Senate back in the midterms, but like by some miracle, if we did and we won the House, we could impeach him.
Yeah.
I just don't feel like he's going to make it to the end of his term. And it's just a gut feeling. That's all I have to go on. I'm not making any real prediction here. I don't know. Obviously, I don't know. But I know I'm not alone on this, because, you know, every day you see people wishing for that to happen. But it's not even a wish. It's not a wish. It's just, I've felt this since last year. Do you feel that? Like, is there like some, I don't know, intuitive thing in you that's telling you this, or
an intuitive thing? You know, a lot of people feel that way. And again, I don't know if it's just wishful thinking, like,
right.
You, I don't know if it's wishful thinking, you know, if thoughts were, if thoughts were daggers, you know,
right.
So I actually don't feel that either. I mean, if it's not his, whatever's happening with his health, we don't really know. I'm not really sure. This administration or this regime, they're committing crimes every day.
Yeah.
Right. And this is why they're doubling down on the disinformation, which is why they're doubling down on the voter suppression with the SAVE Act. They know that if we get a chance, if the American voters get a chance, if we can get out from under the, you know, the mire of, you know, disinformation that they're putting us under, that we will vote them out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, time is limited, regardless of whether it's, you know, the lightning strikes him, you know, or whether his heart gets, whatever happens to him,
yeah.
Right? The time is coming up. And I think you're right. It's going to happen before 2028. You know, but here's the thing. The power is in our hands. We can see that with the protests. We can see that with independent media. Whatever happens between now and 2026, I think is going to be in the hands of the voters, in the hands of constituencies, and people like you and me, right? We actually have the power to change this, and we need to use that power. And it's probably happening more online than offline. Can you still hear me?
No, you just blipped out for a moment.
Okay. You know, I think that what we're seeing online, I'm not really sure it's happening so much offline, but online, we're kind of on the left, the broader left, Democrats and liberals and progressives are kind of, you know, we're kind of eating our own. You know, we need to stop that. There's so much to talk about. There's so many things to talk about. We didn't really get a chance to talk about Biden's cancer diagnosis.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, but I wanted to say that, you know, one thing that we could do is turn the narrative towards the, you know, the President Biden's, former President Biden's cancer moonshot initiative. Which wanted to end cancer as we know it. And
yes.
We can focus on the fact that Republicans ended cancer research, right? We do not have to stay mired in this kind of negativity on the left. We have the power in our hands to change this, each one of us.
Yes, we do. And I, you know, you're absolutely right. I want to keep that in mind as I go forward. And then there was something else, but what did I want to say? I know it had to do with Trump not being here anymore, but I don't remember. Oh, I know what it was. Okay, this is the last question I have for you, and I'm just curious what you think, because I asked my mother this question and she had an opinion about it. I just want to see if you guys match up. But okay, let's just say Trump is no longer president for any reason, you know, and it's the middle of his term. Maybe he's been kicked out. Maybe he dies of natural causes. I don't know. He's just not there anymore. Do you think that is beneficial for democracy? And the reason I ask this is because it was suggested by somebody that if, you know, if Trump were no longer the president, it was J.D. Vance, that maybe J.D. could, you know, J.D. and the Republicans could kind of appeal to some of these, which we need coming up in the latest elections or the next elections, some of these independents who are conservative leaning. So, you know, maybe they don't like Donald Trump and they find him incredibly offensive, but they don't care because they like the agenda of the Republicans. Do you think that's even a possibility? Or do you think that because everything is just so awful right now, and if we do go into a recession and blah, 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 that everybody's just going to be like, no, like, because Trump is really charismatic within his base. And if, you know, if he weren't there, do you think it would adversely affect the Republican Party? Or do you think on some level it would help?
I don't really care about the Republican Party. I care about democracy, right? So a functioning democracy has two healthy parties, at least, right? More than mm-hmm. one, you know, healthy political party. And I'm not sure if you're asking whether J.D. Vance would bring over independents or bring them back to reality. I'm not really sure. I know that J.D. Vance just broadly, and this is just intuition, he just broadly doesn't seem to be liked.
No, he's very unpopular. Yeah.
You know, not just among MAGA, but, you know, among Republicans generally. Yeah. So I don't think he can really do anything, right? And so I don't think he's good for democracy, just generally, right? Whether Trump doesn't make it or not, I don't see him winning anything at the margins that Trump won, you know, some of his
base. Right. Yeah, so, and that's pretty much what my mother thinks. She thinks that, you know, Donald Trump has that charisma, and it helps them. I don't want to say win elections, but, you know, it helps them with elections.
So, right. That's the only thing he has. That's really the only thing he has. He doesn't have knowledge of legislation. And he doesn't have knowledge of, like, how the government works. He has knowledge of nothing, right? Like, he's a very ignorant person, but he's very, very smart at grifting and you know, crime, right? Yeah, and he's very charismatic. Thing, and winning people over.
Yeah.
Right. So sure.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, it's just, I don't understand how we got here, but we're here. Well, I do understand how we got here, but I will never fully understand it, because I feel like it was so irresponsible of American voters to get us here, but we are. And so I'm trying to, I'm with you. I'm with Maddow. I think we have hope. I think we have hope for the midterms. And I think you're right in that we need to be focused on not ripping our side apart, and just, you know, staying focused on what's actually happening with people's lives and Medicare and all that stuff, because it's affecting our lives, you know, every single day. It's a big deal. And unfortunately, I think there are going to be, I mean, I saw a thing where they're halting, I think it was like halting either approval or study for a vaccine that would be for the common cold and the flu. It's like, what's the point? What is the point?
Right.
So, I mean, do you just want us all to die? What is it's unbelievable. So I don't know. That's what I don't understand. It's like how we got to this place of just utter cruelty for the sake of being cruel. It's very difficult to wrap your head around. And whatever. I mean, I'm just I'm a little under the weather today. So if I sounded that way, I apologize. But I'm just kind of like out of it. But I always appreciate talking to you, because I think you bring in a lot of insight, and I appreciate it. And I just want to let you know. So,
thank you so much. I love talking to you too. I'll come on anytime.
Well, obviously, like usual, before I let you go, tell everyone where to find you.
Oh, well, I am the founder and the host of the Electorate podcast. You can go to electorate.com, or you can go to my Substack, actually, electorate.substack.com. But just find Electorate. It ends in RETTE as opposed to ATE, Electorette, and you can find it on all podcast platforms.
Awesome. All right. Well, it was just great talking to you, and I know we'll talk again.
Yes. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Moji Alawodeyal from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-Roe anti-abortion hellscape. Each week, with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.